2 Kings chapter 5. Last week we looked at the first part of the story. We saw how Naaman was healed and how God did a wonderful miracle in his life and healed him of leprosy. But then we pick up tonight in verse number 20. And the happy story turns sad pretty quickly here. And just a little bit of review as you look at our map here. We said that the Naaman was the captain of the army in Syria, up in Damascus, and he would have come down one of these roads, perhaps not that exact road, but that's one of the main roads that would come down and head over to Samaria. And it was there that he found the king and asked the king to heal him, and the king tore his clothes and said, "I can't heal, I'm not God." And then Elisha heard about it, and Elisha stepped in and said, "Call him to me." He came to him, and he sent him to the Jordan River to wash. And he wasn't very happy about that. But finally his servant talked him into it, and he went down there, and God healed him. And God took away his leprosy. But then in verse number 20, we read there, "But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, 'Behold, my master has spared Naaman, the Syrian, in not receiving at his hand that which he brought, but as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him.'" All right? We're in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 20. So Naaman had offered Elisha a great, huge reward. And Elisha said, "I didn't do it. It was God that did it. I don't want your reward." And he wouldn't take it from him. And Gehazi, his servant, saw all this that the king, the king actually gave to Gehazi. And Gehazi was king gave to Naaman to give to Elisha. And he saw all that. And we see here the temptation of Gehazi. And you know, what we're going to do tonight as we look at this here in 2 Kings chapter 5, I want us to notice some steps in temptation. Steps that take place in temptation. And it's something that all of us are familiar with, but some things we can really learn from here. And so, notice first of all, the moment of temptation. You know, temptation begins with a momentary lustful thought. It doesn't matter what kind of temptation it is. Every temptation that you've faced, every temptation I have faced, begins with a momentary lustful thought. Now, Gehazi saw all those riches. Now, we put ourselves in his shoes, and you can't help but understand a little bit where he's coming from. All right? If it was really true that there was perhaps $1 million worth of stuff that they had brought for Elisha, you know, he looks at all that and thinks, "Elisha, why aren't you taking some of this? We could sure use some of this. Look at all that money. Look at all that silver and gold and the nice clothes. Whoa, that is nice looking stuff." And those thoughts went through his mind. And we may have had similar thoughts, but the thoughts should have stopped right there at the thought of what he saw. But he coveted the treasure, and he justified his lustful thoughts. And that's where he started going wrong. When we see something and we covet it and say, "You know, I'd really like that. That wouldn't it be great if I could have that?" And the devil is so subtle. And the devil assured him that he would not get caught. You know, the devil's so keen on that, isn't he? "Oh, don't worry, nobody will know. You won't get caught. It'll be okay. Yeah, other people might have a problem, but you won't. It'll be fine." And the devil just convinces of those kind of things. Over in the book of James, chapter 1, James mentions temptation. And he says there in James 1, verses 14 and 15, he says, "But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin. When sin is finished, it brings forth death." So he says here that man is tempted when he is drawn away. And the words that James uses there, I've preached on it before, but it has to do with like the bait on a hook when Peter's out fishing and he puts that bait on that hook and throws it out there and the fish looks at it and says, "Oh yeah, that looks good." And he starts reeling it in. The fish thinks it's good and he follows the bait and all of a sudden, bang, he bites it and then he's caught. And that's the terminology that we find here in James that is using on that. Now, Gehazi did not think, however, how he was ever going to use all these treasures. You know, you stop and think about it. How is he ever going to wear these fancy clothes that he got off of Naaman?
What's he going to do with them?
He can't wear them. I mean, he comes out one day with these fancy clothes on, and Elisha says, where'd you get that? Oh, you know, I bought it down at the market the other day. No, I mean, he's not thinking. Just, you know, another man. Can you think of anybody else in history that made the same foolish mistake of coveting clothes, and he would not have had any way of using them? Can you think of anybody? Achan, way back in Joshua's day. Achan took all that, those clothes and the gold and the silver and hid it in his tent. And I've often wondered, where did he think he was ever going to wear that stuff? I mean, it was obviously not Jewish clothing. It would have been very clearly foreign. And yet the devil deceives us. You know, the same thing is true with you and me. When we're tempted by the devil, we forget all of our logic. We forget all of our sanity. And we just almost like we lose our sanity and just follow his foolish desires. The devil is so cunning. And he did not think about the spiritual consequences. You know, when we're tempted, we need to think about the physical consequences, but also the spiritual consequences. What is this going to do with my relationship with God? We need to think that. But the devil doesn't want us to think that. He wants us to forget that. And yielding to temptation never satisfies. You think about the times that you've done something you knew was wrong, but you yielded to it anyway. It never satisfies. You know, even remember Moses said that he left Egypt because he knew that the pleasures of Egypt were only temporary. They wouldn't satisfy. They were only for a season. And so it is in our own lives, those temptations, they don't satisfy. And pleasure of sin is only for that season in Hebrews 11, 24 and 25. That's where it talks about Moses there. Hebrews 11, 24 and 25. Now, he should have ran to God's way of escape. Can anybody quote that verse? That God's given us a way of escape. Where is it found? 1 Corinthians what? 10:13. Can you quote it, John Ray?
Yeah. Temptation taken us, that damage is coming to man, but God will use temptation, offer a way, wait, make a way of escape that he should, make a way for escape that he should be able to bear.
Well, that's the John Ray translation, yeah. But it's pretty close. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't perfect, but it wasn't bad. All right. So God tells us here that there's a way of escape. And that's an important thing for us to remember. That every time we are tempted, God provides a way of escape. And God wants us to take the exit and run. But so many times we don't. So many times we don't. And how you respond to those first moments of temptation could cost you dearly. Now stop and think about that. There are people that are today are suffering tremendous consequences because they didn't respond right in those first few moments of temptation. Even in Gehazi's life here, many times after this, he probably thought, why didn't I just run? Why did I fall for that? This is so stupid. Why did I do that? Because the consequences were dreadful that he faced. And we're going to see that in a moment. But temptation's that way. That first moment of temptation. Then he yielded to temptation. We see in verse number 21. So Gehazi followed after Naaman. And when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from his chariot to meet him and said, is all well? All right. So Naaman had already left. He's in his chariot with a horse obviously pulling it. I don't think the servant was pulling the chariot. So it would have been a good way down the road. But Gehazi then takes off. He must not have waited very long. And he was running to catch up with them. And you can just see him, old Gehazi, you know, jogging down the road, trying to catch up with him. And this whole time, his conscience, the Lord's speaking to his conscience saying, you shouldn't be doing this. This isn't right. But he just ignores all that and keeps on running. And then he gets close to the chariot here. And Naaman sees him. And the passion of lust pushed aside his guilty conscience all that time. And that's exactly what happens to us. When we make our choice, we make up our mind, I'm going to do this. And you know, sometimes it all happens in almost like that. Other times, it's a plan. Little by little, we think about things. We think, you know, I could do that. Nobody'd know. That'd be all right. It'd be fun. I'd enjoy it. Sometimes it's a plot in our minds. Other times, it's a plot that all takes place in a few seconds. But he yielded to that temptation. And lustful emotions were at a peak. They deadened his conscience and blurred his clear thinking. He wasn't thinking correctly. And this is a critical phase of temptation. It's a critical phase. And the choice has been made to sin, but he hadn't yet committed the sin. Well, he had made his choice. He said, I'm going to get it, and I'm going to after him. And he took off running after him. And all that was bad because he was doing the wrong thing. But he hadn't actually done anything wrong, so to speak, yet. And so he still had time to escape. He still had time to run away, but he didn't. And it was as the young man that Solomon describes in Proverbs 7:22. And that chapter 7 is about the strange woman. And he says there in verse 22 of that young man, he says, he goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter and as a fool to the correction of stocks. For those of you who weren't farmers, I can tell you that, you know, anytime we were taking our cattle to the slaughter, they didn't always get into the truck very easily. But it wasn't because they knew where they were going. It was just they didn't want to get into the truck. But they weren't, you know, those cows, once you get them loaded in there, they didn't all start, we're going to die. They didn't know. They didn't think about that. They just kind of went along with it. Oh, yeah, well, where are we going now? All right. They climbed out, went down. Well, at least we're out of the truck. And next thing they know, they're in this other pen. And next thing they know, yeah, that's the end of them. All right. And they didn't know. And he says the fool does the same thing. He's as the ox going to the slaughter and the fool to the correction of stocks. You know, they'd put him in the stocks there. He would put their hands in their head and their feet in the stocks. And the fool just, he wasn't thinking. And he says that the young man that follows this sensual woman is doing the same thing. He's yielding to the temptation. And during this stage of temptation, he still had time to turn around. He hadn't gotten himself actually committed to sin yet. But he didn't. His lust conceived and he lied. Verse number 22. Naaman had just spoken to him, and he says in verse 22, and he said, all is well. Lie number one. All right, well, all might have been well, but that wasn't what he was getting at. My master has sent me, saying, behold, even now there become to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments. Now, I don't know how long he was chasing him down the road and how long ago he had left, but it doesn't sound like he left all that long ago. And if he'd only been going down the road, you know, a couple of kilometers, when did all this take place? You know, I mean, it must have been as soon as Naaman walked out, here comes these guys knocking on his door. You know, the story doesn't really add up all that well, but it served its purpose. And Naaman accepted it. You know, whether he believed it was logical or not, I don't know. Whether he really truly thought that Elisha did that, I don't know. But you know, if he did, what kind of thoughts would have gone through Naaman's mind? No doubt he would have thought, that's funny. That preacher said he didn't want any of the money because God did the miracle. And now he's changed his mind. Maybe his God isn't any different than any other gods. Who knows what kind of thoughts went through his mind, but it didn't help the cause of God. And Gehazi had lied to him now, and also these thoughts probably put God in a bad light in the eyes of Naaman. But whether Naaman suspected that he was lying or not, we don't know. But one thing we do know is God knew. God knew. And you know, every time we are in one of those situations where we're tempted to sin, doesn't matter whether it's a little tiny so-called sin or a big one, we've thought about it either a long time or instantaneously. We've made a choice. We've headed in the wrong direction. We didn't go through the escape route. We bypassed that and headed into the plot. And we step out and we actually do something that is heading us in the wrong direction. He lied. He lied. And God knew it. You ever noticed, and I'm sure you have, that one sin always leads to another? Yeah, he lied, and then soon he would have to lie again to cover up the first lie. And it just kept getting him into deeper and deeper trouble. And that is so true in society today, and in our own lives. You know, people that are addicted to pornography started with the first lustful look. Anger leads to more anger. Gossip leads to more gossip. Bitterness leads to hate, and hate leads to revenge. One drink of alcohol leads to another. You know, I think we can pretty safely say there's very few drunks out there that thought, you know, give me that beer. I want to become a drunk. You know, that's my goal in life. I want to become a drunk. Not very many would do that. There's probably loads of them out there that said, I can drink it, it won't bother me any. It's okay. It's not going to affect me any. But it did. Now, each of these things are things that are characteristics of temptation. Now, he then hid his sinful treasures. This was a complication as well, you can imagine. Verse number 24. And when he came to, well, actually, let's read 23. And Naaman said, be content, take 2 talents. And he urged him, and he bound 2 talents of silver and 2 bags with 2 changes of garments, and he laid them upon 2 of his servants, and they bare them before him. Now, the word talent is a confusing word because it is used for regular weights, it is used for money, it's used for a lot of different things, and it seems to have a different weight in different places. So exactly how heavy a talent of silver was, I don't know. But for some reason, Naaman sent 2 servants to carry these things. One each had a talent of the silver and a garment, and the other one had a talent of silver and a garment. So whether it was that heavy that they actually needed 2 different guys to carry it, or whether he just sent the 2 guys because he had extra servants, and I don't know. You got an idea?
I was just didn't one of the kings taxed it? Israel at one point for 100 talents of silver a year. So you can imagine if that was a heavy tax, then you can imagine the talents quite big.
Yeah, it had to have been fairly heavy. But at the same time, then some of the king's crowns that said it had a talent of gold on them, you think, put on his heavy. So I don't know. I really don't know. But all we know, for some reason, he had a servant carrying each of them. But then he gets to the city wall in verse 24, and when they came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in his house and let the men go, and they departed. Now, it sounds like they stopped at the gate of the city, and Gehazi says, thank you very much, I'll take them from you now, and he went and sneaks into the city. So, you know, if they were really heavy, you can just imagine Gehazi kind of acting like it wasn't heavy. He's walking in, and he gets to his house, and he hides in his house. And so he's got these problems that are building up now. He's got these huge chunks of silver and these fancy garments that he's got to hide now and cover up. And so, again, as I said earlier, where is he going to wear this stuff? How's he going to use this? You know, how's he going to take his big chunk of silver? Is he going to take it probably in the house, you know, chip, 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 or take a little bit of it down to the corner store and oh, I got a little chunk of silver here. I want to cash in for some food. I don't know what he was planning on doing that, but he had a temptation there that he yielded to. And he had to continue to sin, to lie, to cover it up. Now, God had revealed all this to Elisha. I'm not sure how God always did that, but God seemed to have revealed it very vividly to him. And Elisha knows all about it before he even comes back. In verse number 25, and he went in and he stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, "Whence comest thou, Gehazi?" He said, "Thy servant went no whither." Another lie. I didn't go anywhere. And then Elisha says, and he said unto him, "Went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants?" See, Elisha knew all about it. God had revealed these things to Elisha. And, you know, we can hide our sin from other people, and God's not going to reveal that to me or to your neighbor or somebody else that you've done something wrong. But God knows. God knows our heart. And that's what really matters. And we've got to keep that in mind. And if we can just, you know, think about it in your own heart. If we could each truly grasp and not forget that God's watching everything we do, it would keep us out of a lot of trouble. It would. And we need to remember that. He needed to remember that these things were true, but he didn't. Now, his greed cost him a life of shame and suffering. Someone once wisely said, and I have no idea who said this, but it's worth writing down if you've never heard it before. Sin will take you farther than you want to go. It'll keep you longer than you want to stay, and it'll cost you more than you want to pay. Let me read it again. Sin will take you farther than you want to go. It'll keep you longer than you want to stay, and it'll cost you more than you want to pay. That is true. That is so true. And Gehazi certainly grasped that message vividly. Verse 27, Elisha goes on and he says, "The leprosy thereof, of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever." And he went out of his presence a leper white as snow. Never the same again. And we find later on that Elisha's got a different servant. So Gehazi lost his ministry. He lost his respect. He lost his privilege of living in his home. He would now be an outcast for the rest of his life, destined to live in a shack outside of town with the other lepers until his body eventually decayed and he died. All because he wanted something that wasn't his. And oh, how sad that is. Because it happens to people all the time. They get involved in things they think aren't going to hurt them. They don't realize the danger involved. They don't realize what it's going to cost them. They make wrong choices. And bang, they get caught and it ruins their life. And I've tried to make this, I suppose, somewhat dramatic tonight, to help emphasize in our hearts so we'd understand the significance of this. Because there are so many people today that wish, just like Gehazi, that they could turn around and redo and skip that part of their life. Sin is dangerous. Whether it's a little sin or a big sin, it's dangerous. Now, some reminders for us. God knows the thoughts and the intents of our hearts. Hebrews 4:12, where the Word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of our heart. And coveting is sin that grows and spreads like cancer. It is wanting more than God has given to us. It is not being content. And folk, we need to learn to be content. I say we, I'm saying me too. We need to learn to be content with what God gives us and not desire something more than we have. God's always good to us if we'll be content. The safest time to flee temptation is the moment it enters your mind. That first moment that it enters your mind, you think, oh, that looks nice. No, no. I'm not going to think on that. I'm not going to go that route. I'm not going to take even a second look. I'm not going to think about it anymore. And you just shut it off right then, because you, as soon as you start dwelling on it and thinking about it and pondering over it, the devil's going to throw all kinds of thoughts in your mind, just like he did Gehazi, to make you think that it'll be fine, nobody will know, you'll never get caught, it'll be okay. If you are pondering a temptation and thinking that it won't hurt you, you're like the mouse that's examining the tempting bait on the trap and thinking it was harmless. And we all know what happens when the mouse takes the bait. Unless he's a clever mouse. But most of the time, that's not the way it happens. And it's forever too late. And we need to be careful and do not be a fool. We need to run. Run! That's why God tells us there in 2 Timothy 2:22, flee also youthful lust. Flee! Because it is dangerous. The consequences of sin are always worse than the devil wants us to think they are. I remember years ago, and perhaps you've heard this statement as well, but I remember a preacher saying about Samson. He said, Samson's sin was binding and blinding and grinding. When you think about Samson, Samson, when they caught him, they bound him. They blinded him. And then they made him grind in the prison house for the rest of his life because of his sin. For Gehazi, we could say the similar thing. We could say that Gehazi's sin was dulling, decaying, and deadly. It was dulling in the sense that leprosy dulls the senses of the fingers and the toes. And they lose their feeling. And then they get injured and they start to decay, and then you get disease in them. It's dulling and it's decaying as they begin to decay, and then eventually it's deadly. It'll kill them. And that's all that Gehazi had to look forward to. All because he wanted something that wasn't his. We need to fear and flee temptation. And folks, I don't know how to make it any more clear, but I needed this and you need it, because we need a constant reminder. Sin is never good. Sin will always hurt us. And the devil is so cunning. We've got to fear and flee temptation. And so as you think of Gehazi, he got what he wanted. Not sure what he did with his fancy clothes and his silver over in the leper colony. But it didn't do him any good.